So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
The following program is rated TVMA. What you're about to watch contains explicit language, adult themes, violence, and may not be suitable for viewers under 18. Viewer discretion is strongly advised.
Life, no one really knows where it will take us. Is it our own decisions that guide us? Or does fate play the bigger role, dictating the road we'll travel? Which course we'll be steering.
7 years in the making.
What twists we must endure. One thing is for certain. There is no certainty. No way to know. And everything can change in an instant.
A year and a half of his life. Gone.
In a flash, the things you hold close can disappear. Vanish like a lost thought. Lifelong trust can turn on you. Blood can betray you. And the future you foresaw, gone.
A family broken.
Tonight is a pivotal point where paths collide.
The 30-man Royal Rumble matchup.
The winner goes to the main event at WrestleMania to wrestle for championship gold.
And while some men's dreams will be shattered, no one's lives will ever be the same. One moment can change everything.
Philadelphia, here we come!
Tonight, fate will rear his head. Destiny will play his hand. The road to WrestleMania begins tonight.
It is Review Away. I am John Pollock, along with Wei Ting. Mm-hmm. Happy Friday, Wei.
Thanks, man. Wow, what a week.
What a weekend coming up.
Oh, weekend, yes.
Do you know how much stuff is going on this weekend? I bet you could list it off. Try.
There's TakeOver Saturday. There's the Royal Rumble, of course. And, of course, there's Evolve.
Two Evolve shows.
There's a UFC... Fight Night.
On Fox. And Bellator tonight.
But I'm not going to watch all that.
No. What are you going to watch?
I will watch the Royal Rumble. I will watch TakeOver, but probably after Saturday. But I'll be watching those.
This is maybe the least anticipated TakeOver, which is not a knock on this show this weekend. But of all the TakeOvers... This is one that feels like a transitional takeover, as there's still – it's like there's a certain class that is on their way out of NXT, or you figure are close to the end and trying to get your next level in play. Mm-hmm. And to me, I'm more interested in what is coming out of this takeover. I'm sure it's going to be a very good show. I think the crowd will be great.
Is it just the star power?
Yes. I think there's something to that. Nakamura kind of feels like he's in a holding pattern in NXT at the moment. And I'll say I am more intrigued with the two Evolve shows this weekend than I am with TakeOver. It's Chris Hero's last two matches before he goes back to the WWE.
He could be on the next TakeOver.
Yeah. He could be on this TakeOver. He could show up.
Sure.
Very possible.
Yeah.
So I'm really looking forward to those Evolve shows, to be honest. It's just there's so much this weekend. To try and get through. I don't know where I'm going to find time to watch that UFC card on Saturday.
Who's on that one?
That's headlined by Valentina Shevchenko and Juliana Pena, and Donald Cerrone's fighting Jorge Masvidal.
I'll watch that.
Andre Arlovsky's on. He's got a very difficult fight.
Yeah.
With Francis Ngannou.
It's really hard to keep up because I knew that fight was happening. I didn't even know it was this weekend. So
yeah, it's a Fox card, and it's going. Right up against TakeOver on Saturday. Right. So anyway, that is all this weekend. This is not a show that looks forward. This is a show that looks back.
Mm-hmm.
And we are going way back to January the 25th of 2004, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, the Royal Rumble from the Wachovia Center.
Mm-hmm.
I spent a lot of time looking back at this. I even watched some of the Raw and SmackDown coming out of this show.
Wow.
As well.
Okay, great.
So I have lots of thorough note-taking for this Royal Rumble 2004 event.
What was happening at this time?
At this point, this was the lead-up to WrestleMania 20.
Mm-hmm.
This was the full-on push for Chris Benoit. And I'll say we have reviewed a lot of stuff on this show that involves Chris Benoit. We haven't actively gone out of our way to not watch shows with him. This did feel like too much for me watching this.
Really?
It's because this was all based around Benoit.
Dude, we reviewed WrestleMania 20.
Yeah, I don't know. I think that this also had to deal with the fact that we picked this show. And I think it was that weekend after we picked it that the Snuka passing happened.
Yeah.
So that was a big story. And then I sit down to watch this. And I kind of put this off because I was really not in the mood for – I kind of felt like maybe we shouldn't have picked this one.
Mm.
It was just so heavy on Benoit. Like I still have a very hard time watching this and just completely turning my head off to everything else. I can't just watch Benoit in a vacuum.
Yeah.
For the wrestling. And that was certainly the case on this show for me, at least. Did you have any of those issues or not as much?
I can't really say I did. I think for me, it's like, how do I say it? Like going back and watching, Benoit matches,
outside of this show, I will never go back and watch Benoit matches just.
No.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, I really wouldn't either. But, like, I guess I can still...
Separate the two.
Yeah, and I can just, like, kind of mainly watch just for his technique and for his technical expertise, and of which, you know, he really was one of the best. So I guess over time I was able to separate the two a bit more. I don't know what that says about me. I feel like I'm less human.
No, it doesn't. Everyone's going to watch things like that differently. I feel also it had to do with the fact that Eddie was so prominent on this show, and you knew this was building to WrestleMania, where when you think of Benoit and Eddie at WrestleMania,
mm-hmm.
that's a haunting image. And that was utilized. I really don't want to get into this whole Benoit discussion.
It's a haunting image, but at the same time, I
that was also the B-roll used all over the death because of his family being in there, in the ring.
Especially when
it's not a moment I choose to look back on fondly.
But like, I guess somehow maybe the nostalgia sometimes is still enough to cloud me so that like when I did kind of go through watching that show, I wasn't feeling, you know, like haunted by it. In fact, I'm taken back to that time when I saw that image when I'm watching that show live and thinking how great of a moment that was. So again, I don't know what that says about me.
Do you want to know at that WrestleMania 20 event, beyond myself, because I would be number one, but the other celebrities in the crowd that night at WrestleMania 20 were Ariel Helwani and now president Donald Trump.
Oh, he was there.
He was there. He was interviewed at ringside at one point where he encouraged Jesse Ventura to run for president.
Interesting.
How funny is that now, in hindsight?
That's really interesting.
Crazy. So we are going to get into this show. 17,289 was the announced attendance, over $1 million gate here in Philadelphia. And this show did 500,000 buys back on pay-per-view, which was actually way down from the prior year, which did 585,000 pay-per-view buys. This would have been the lowest purchased Rumble since 1998 and would also be their lowest that decade until 2009. So this was a dip for the Rumble, which as business went up and down, you could rely on the Rumble. Still a very solid number. You hear 500,000 buys. That's still pretty strong, but in comparison to other Rumbles, was down.
Do you know how it did like the year prior to the network launching?
The year prior, it would have been – that was a real big one because – actually, the 2014, that was the month before the network launched. I'd have to look it up.
Okay.
It was still very – I want to say off the top of my head, like 480 or so.
Okay.
Maybe.
And that was considered good.
Yeah, the 2013 one was really big because that was the one The Rock faced CM Punk. That was a big one in the year prior. So another thing, just our last stat before we go into the actual show. Raw and SmackDown coming out of this show way to put into perspective the numbers they were doing. This was crazy. 2004, which was not exact, like the popularity peak was over with. Raw did 4.79 million viewers. Today you're looking at 3.2 after football. And SmackDown, back on UPN, so they were on network television, 5.86 million viewers. So SmackDown was decidedly the number one television program for the company at the time. And our theme song way, Nothing Left to Lose by Puddle of Mud, which sadly was dropped on the WWE Network version. And instead we got this knockoff of Smells Like Teen Spirit.
Yeah.
And now, Raw and SmackDown present WWE Royal Rumble.
It was such a bad knockoff. But
and this wasn't even like the old WCW DDP theme. It was its own knockoff.
No, that would have been great. And imagine if they started using
Self-High-Five as a just random production theme.
But it was especially odd because they had so many video packages set to this Puddle of Mud song, which I'm sure was fantastic.
It's not. But, as we heard at the beginning of the show.
But like instead, we had this very generic, lyricless Smells Like Teen Spirit ripoff underneath it. So it made all these video packages completely weird.
Yeah. You watch them. It's like, God, their packages sucked at the time. And it was actually not true. But when you take the music and just put this blanket it with this awful theme, it just feels like crap.
Mm-hmm.
But man, this theme was used all over the place. So then we had one of the very deep opening videos that they would do every now and then. Speaking about the theme of life and not knowing where life will take us, if our choices or fate dictates our road, tying it into the road to WrestleMania. And everything can change in an instant as they show Hardcore Holly's neck being broken by Brock Lesnar. Things you can cherish can vanish in a second as they showed the Guerrero brothers, and the future you foresaw is gone. Tonight, fate will rear his, and destiny will play his hand, and the road to WrestleMania begins tonight.
I thought it was really good. I really liked it. Was it too over the top?
No. I like when they make these. This is much deeper than wrestling. This is life and art coming into complete unison.
It felt like very much like a David Sahadi piece. But was he still with the company at the time?
I think he had left by now for TNA. Mm-hmm. I think, yes. This definitely had David Sahadi all over it whenever you had these kinds of elaborate openings.
And he must read a lot of like
I'm sure.
Old fiction.
Yeah, definitely. Jim Ross notes it is the 17th annual Royal Rumble. Bravo to Jim Ross.
Wow.
You know who I gave a sterling applause to last week was Jerry Lawler, but the 30th annual Royal Rumble. Well, he did a radio interview this past week. He dropped the ball. He called it the 30th anniversary.
Oh.
Lawler.
Shit.
He had it right. And then screwed it up. So the announcers, this is deep into the brand split. For Raw, we had Jim Ross, Jerry Lawler, and Jonathan Coachman, who was Eric Bischoff's assistant. We had Eric Bischoff, the GM of Raw. Paul Heyman was the GM of SmackDown at the time.
And what was Steve Austin?
Steve Austin was the co-GM with Bischoff, and Coachman was Bischoff's assistant.
Okay.
If you've got all that straight. And then Michael Cole and Taz were the team on SmackDown. But maybe my favorite was Carlos Cabrera, who was wearing a zip-up sweater for his casual Rumble attire and then decked out in a nice suit was Hugo Savinovich. Quite the contrast here of how important this event was to each Spanish broadcaster.
Maybe he had his luggage lost.
Might have been. Show kicked off with Ric Flair and Batista defending the tag titles in a tables match against the Dudley Boys. And Coachman is selling a rib injury after he was put through a table on the Raw going into the Rumble. by the Dudleys. Batista comes out and instructs them to kill the damn music. And he says they have kicked the Dudleys' asses over and over, and they are the biggest losers in Philadelphia since the Philadelphia Eagles.
Ouch.
Whoa. Excuse me,
oh,
Mr.
No.
Batista?
Not our football.
Whoa. That is uncalled for.
Yeah.
So we were off with a vengeance.
Yeah, it was I thought it was a weak promo. Especially could, you know, seeing what Batista was capable of later on in his career. This seemed like a very early part of his promo life.
He made lots of improvements in 2004, but at the start of this year, people were not pegging this guy for greatness. He was a body and that was it. But he the greatest move was putting this guy in Evolution and keeping him hidden.
Would you ever have assumed this guy would become an A-list Hollywood actor watching this?
No. I did not foresee Batista here insulting the Philadelphia Eagles.
He's getting great reviews for Guardians 2.
I hope this guy never comes back to wrestling. He doesn't need it.
Oh, of course he doesn't.
Yeah, this guy, I'm so – he's going to be the Bond villain in the next Bond film. Mm-hmm. One of the villains, I guess. I mean, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
Guy that seems, and from all people around him, like a genuinely, like, good individual.
Yeah.
Like a very humble guy as well. So they fought on the floor before the bell rang, and Rick takes a back body drop from Devon, and Bubba slides the table from one side of the ring all the way to the other into Batista's ribs.
Pretty good aim.
Yeah.
Pretty and good.
That took some talent on Bubba. Bubba does the bionic elbow and instructs Ric Flair to, quote, suck his dick, which Rick did not do.
He's been watching his Gorillas of Destiny.
Yeah. This was also a WWE Network TV mature warning we got at the beginning of this.
Was it only because of that, or do you think it was the Chris Benoit stuff?
Probably. I don't know what
they couldn't have been.
No, I don't think it was. I don't think it was only Bubba under his breath, or I mean.
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of blood too.
There was a lot of blood on this show.
The Shawn and Hunter match.
Yeah, that's true. That was probably the biggest
right.
catalyst for the mature warning. There was a double team neck breaker to Batista. Table was in the ring. They set up for the 3D to Flair when Jonathan Coachman runs down onto the apron. He gets brought into the ring by Bubba, exposes his taped ribs, and they go for the headbutt off the top, which Ric Flair blocks. Bubba goes to the floor, and Batista just returns to the ring, lifts up Devon, and puts him through the table with a spine buster, and this ends in 4 minutes and 22 seconds.
Yeah, to me, it just kind of ended without that much fanfare. It just kind of – by the end of it, you're just left thinking, well, that was a tables match, you know? Not much
– with the Dudleys in Philadelphia.
Yeah, not much excitement. Just a guy put another guy through a table.
Yeah, and this show, certainly the first hour or so, I mean, the guys got very little time for their matches. Coach could barely speak afterwards because of his ribs being hurt and announces Ric Flair and Batista as the winners of the match. And that was all we got of Coach, correct? He was never back on the announcement.
No, he was not, no.
Ric Flair just did this crazy promo.
And no, what it was! Was Evolution doing what they said they do? Put your ass through a table. Pick your splinters out of it. Evolution forever. Woo!
And Ross states he is almost in a deranged state, and Flair just ends by yelling, Evolution forever. This was crazy Rick, and he got a number of promos on this show, being Ric Flair. Then we had the latest model for Hot Topic, interviewing John Cena. Josh Matthews, dressed up as 2004.
Yeah, this guy was about as 2000s as you might – like, he looked like he would fit in what the fuck is that? What's that group's name?
Good Charlotte.
No. I'm thinking – you know that song?
My Chemical Romance.
No. They were like more emo, weren't they?
That kind of was a look here for Josh.
I'm thinking like, you know that, what's that song? New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits. Chinese food makes me sick.
I don't know the song at all.
Okay.
New Kids on the Block had a bunch of hits. Chinese food makes me sick. And I think it's right when girls stop by for the summer.
I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch. I'd take her if I had one wish.
Well, anyway, he looks like he would be in that group.
Okay, more unlikely. Batista, after that promo, becomes a Hollywood star, or Josh Matthews would eventually host a fashion podcast.
Excuse me?
Yes.
He does that?
He no longer does it any longer.
Wow.
I would say maybe Josh Matthews yeah. was more unlikely if we were to go with those two as one or both coming true.
What was the name of his fashion podcast?
Let's find out. Maybe it was YouTube.
I feel bad. They can
John
this guy
Matthews.
That much.
Fashion.
I mean, I'm sure he has good fashion sense.
I mean,
I'm not one to judge.
Men's Lifestyle Aficionado, presented by Josh Matthews.
Okay.
From fashion to pop culture and all the things that we as men talk about are covered in this weekly podcast. Men's Lifestyle Aficionado is about the trends that we as 20 to 30 somethings see today. All from the point of view of someone who has always been looked at having a unique style and sense of fashion, Josh Matthews.
All right.
I like that he uses his wrestling name too for his podcast.
Okay. Well, nobody would know his other name, I guess.
I guess not. You got to market yourself accurately. Okay, so the show continues. Oh, with our Josh Matthews promo with John Cena, another man that has since updated his look dramatically since 2004. He does a rap promo on the Rumble match, and then the Stoner pops out in front of him and says, "Sup, dude," as Rob Van Dam does one of his memorable WWE scripted interactions with another fellow performer, and then walks off. As Cena says that he's been talking to Mary Jane. And then Cena says,
"That dude's a trip. Looks like he's been talking to Mary Jane. I'm going to win the Rumble, man. He thinks he's beating me tonight? He can suck my candy cane. I'm cutting through competition. Your boy is sharp as a knife. Tonight I win the Royal Rumble. Word mother frickin' life.
He can suck my candy cane. Word mother frickin' life. As I nearly turn this off. Who wore it better? Josh Matthews with whatever he was wearing or John Cena with his Philadelphia Phillies retro jersey combo?
John Cena by far.
This was when those retro jerseys were certainly fashionable.
Yeah. Yeah. I thought he looked cool. I mean, it was a step up from, I guess, what he's wearing today.
Yes.
And I think this was the John Cena that everybody – you know, adults included, really enjoyed.
He was a babyface now on SmackDown. He was certainly emerging as a guy that people wanted to see elevated. And this is a gimmick I always say. It ages horribly, but it definitely was popular in 2003 and kind of hit its limit in 2004. And then by 2005, the rap kind of disappeared.
I mean, the thing is, like, even when it debuted, I feel like it was largely tongue-in-cheek. You know, it was a heel gimmick when it debuted. This white, obnoxious rapper from, you know...
But it stopped being a parody.
Boston.
It was... Wow,
yeah,
look, it's...
Because it got over.
It's the rapper, John Cena. He's got an album out.
But not necessarily because people thought he was good at rap, I don't think, at least. But his insults were actually really good. His lines were really good in promos like these. And, you know, that was always... That I don't think was ever disputed.
Yes, he's one guy that you can say in 2002, 2003... He had great rap promos, but you probably wouldn't be able to find one today if you went back and listened to it. You would say, well, this guy talks well, but I don't know if this would be my evidence to support this.
You mean like watching one of these?
At the time, I think they were great.
I still think they're very good. I mean, maybe not necessarily this one. But
maybe
I
not
think,
this
I
one.
I think he had some good lines. Yeah.
Listen, it's the gimmick that saved his job.
Oh, yeah.
So they had an empty front row seat reserved for Mick Foley after Steve Austin's challenge on Raw for him to show up. So this was, I thought, a really interesting angle they did at the time, where Mick Foley came back the month prior and faced Randy Orton on an episode of Raw, and Mick Foley wouldn't face him. He goes to the back, Randy Orton confronts him, and then Randy Orton spits in his face, like just spits right in his face. And Randy Orton watches as Mick Foley just turns and walks away from the arena. Mm-hmm. And for weeks, Like, this is so unlike how they handle any baby faces to show a morsel of weakness. And here they had this guy portray a coward. And for weeks and weeks, you are left to believe that Mick Foley is scared of Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm.
And it climaxes on that Raw with Austin challenging Mick Foley to show up at the Rumble, confront Randy Orton, or else you'll be a coward. And Jim Ross even going so far as to state that, well, he'd say later in this show he would feel that Mick Foley is a coward not showing up to the Rumble. I thought it was a really interesting story, and it turned into a much bigger program for Randy Orton.
Yeah, as the Legend Killer.
Yeah.
It's amazing that a guy who was known for taking chair shots to the head ended up getting a bigger reaction from spit to the face.
Yes.
Spit to the face or a chair shot to the head.
There's a lesson to be learned there. So then it was the Cruiserweight title match. Without any ropes being taped, without any lighting adjustments, it was just the Cruiserweights. Rey Mysterio and Jamie Noble. And at this time, Nydia was the girlfriend of Jamie Noble, and she was blind after Tajiri had sprayed the dreaded black mist into her face, and she had been blind since October.
Black mist.
The black mist.
What's the difference?
Well, it's debilitating, I guess, to your vision.
Hmm.
Noble was sporting his Tommy Hilfiger jorts in 2004. Noble dropped Ray on the top rope with his midsection, and Taz explains that visually impaired means that you're blind. Cole then says, well, thanks, Dr. Phil. Taz corrects him, saying, Dr. Phil deals with relationships. Michael Cole says, I was speaking about the issues between Noble and Nydia. This was their best interaction on the show.
Oh, yes. Right.
There was a spinning Hurricane Rana and then a wheelbarrow into a bulldog by Ray. Reverse cross off the middle rope into a gutbuster by Noble, and then Nydia accidentally tripped Noble, and this led to a 619 by Ray and a springboard leg drop. These guys got 3 minutes and 13 seconds with Ray retaining the title.
It was incredibly brief, about the length of a TV match.
No, because the SmackDown after this, they got a rematch where it felt like that was the pay-per-view match where they got considerably more time on SmackDown than they did here on this show. This felt like this show was just crammed in, and like this match didn't even need to happen on this show, to be honest. This totally, you're right, felt like a TV match.
You might expect the same for the Cruiserweights this weekend.
Possible. Do you know how long the show is on Sunday? How long they have it scheduled for?
How long?
2 hour kickoff show from 5 to 7, and then the Rumble is 4 hours.
It's actually 4 hours.
It's a 6 hour block on Sunday.
Wow. What's on the kickoff?
They haven't announced anything yet other than Sean and Lawler on the panel. Hmm. And I imagine there'll be a bunch of matches added.
Well,
were any added on Raw SmackDown this week? I'm drawing a blank.
I mean, I'll have to check my notes.
I'll go download our show.
It's been so long since Monday, Tuesday. But anyway, I feel like the Rumble is a show that you could justify 4 hours for. Because for many people, it's on the level, if not greater, of a show than WrestleMania, at least in terms of anticipation.
How long is WrestleMania going to be this year?
Probably 9 hours.
You say that, and yet I look at.
Really, it's 3-4 days, you know?
Yeah.
So.
Lengthy.
Yeah.
So, yeah, this was just, not even much of a match, to be honest. If you want to see probably what their pay-per-view match was before it got cut down to this time, go watch the SmackDown coming out of this show. They got more time, and on that show, Nydia took off and revealed that she was not blind, which set up Jamie Noble versus Nydia in a blindfold match at the next pay-per-view.
Which I feel like we've reviewed.
I feel we have, too. Mm-hmm. That was where Eddie wins the title from Brock.
Yeah.
Well-remembered show. Which transitions well, because next up was Eddie and Chavo. And they showed the history of this, which had been a long breakup tease. They lost the tag titles to the Bashams in October. And throughout this time, they're having their problems. Kurt Angle is trying to play peacemaker. And Chavo finally turns on Eddie. Then the following week, his father, Chavo Sr., shows up to apologize on behalf of his son, but then ultimately jumps his younger brother, Eddie, and aligns with his son.
Great. Awesome.
I always enjoyed Chavo Sr.
Yeah.
He was a lot of fun during this time, and then later becoming Chavo Classic.
Yeah.
Yeah, he definitely – he was a great second for Chavo Jr. Mm-hmm. So Chavo and Eddie. Chavo Sr. is out in his corner, very loud Eddie chants at the start. You could really see the audience and the momentum for Eddie.
Definitely. Eddie comes out in his lowrider and Taz to prove that the show had a timestamp on it. That's fat, man. P-H-A-T.
Yeah.
The lit of 2004.
Yes.
I'd say.
So the crowd very much into Eddie and his fat ride. There was a long collar and elbow tie-up to start this this aggressive grudge match. Mm-hmm. And Chavo then slapped Eddie after they broke. They're chopping one another. Eddie thumbs him in the eye right in front of Nick Patrick. They fought on the floor. Senior yanks Eddie off the steps by the leg behind the referee's back, and then Eddie gets knocked into the announcer's desk, and then Eddie is mounted when he's back in the ring by Chavo. And the story here is that Eddie wants to out-wrestle his nephew, and he doesn't want to resort to dirty tactics. Mm. Of course, he did thumb him in the eye, but nonetheless, he's not throwing any punches at Chavo. Eddie tries to apply an armbar, and Chavo clasps the hands to get the rope break.
It was actually a pretty impressive armbar from guard. Like, textbook, you know. For 2004, I thought it was pretty cool.
Think about this in the context of mixed martial arts. This was 1 week before BJ Penn beat Matt Hughes for the welterweight title.
Wow.
This was a long time ago. Then Chavo goes for the three amigos. The last one gets blocked, and Eddie hits a tornado DDT, and then he hits three amigos, leaves Chavo on the mat, climbs up, hits a frog splash, and he pins Chavo in 8 minutes and 4 seconds.
Again, and you have to wonder if this match was cut too.
I have to think it was. This was a big, big feud.
Yeah, and it ended just kind of, eh.
Months of buildup for this 8 minute, and this was the blow off. There was no controversy.
Eddie won the title the next month.
Yes, and so. I guess they kind of had to fast track this blow off, but you're right. Like, this could have used a lot more time and just bounced the cruiserweight match from the show.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't necessarily seem appropriate because they seemed to take such a long time building to this match. And with the match only ending at 8 minutes, it didn't feel all that satisfying, unfortunately.
No, and afterwards, they kind of put the exclamation point on the conclusion of this feud by Eddie attacking Chavo Sr. The crowd is chanting. They were big into Eddie here. He returns. He kicks Chavo Sr. low, attacks Chavo with punches. Then he uses Chavo Sr.'s tie and ties him to the bottom rope. And Chavo Jr. is bleeding. He's fish hooking him.
Yeah.
And Sr.'s pleading. What has Eddie done? And leaves both of them just laying there. And Chavo Jr. is wrecked.
Yeah, I suppose there were storyline implications by Eddie, by giving Eddie this post-match beatdown. For me, though, watching it and seeing the crowd's reaction, I felt like they might have had him go too far because it felt less like a guy getting revenge than a guy just being sadistic, which is how it came across to me.
Yeah, this is a –
which was a little odd.
An uncle and a nephew too. Very – really pulling on the heartstrings. This was not the city of brotherly love for Chavo Sr. and Eddie.
Yeah, I'm sure just the lack of time kind of really hurt the emotion of the
match. This one was really, and I remember at the time a lot of people upset at the lack of time this big feud got on the blow-off show. But, I mean, it was bigger and better things for Eddie. And even on the next pay-per-view, Chavo wins the Cruiserweight title from Ray. So they at least had plans for Chavo, too, to have a bit of a singles run on SmackDown.
Yeah, you could, but watching this and seeing the crowd react to Eddie, you definitely got the sense that this was a guy ready for the championship.
He was, yeah, he had been heating up throughout 2003, especially in the fall. It was the right time to break up the team and go with Eddie. I mean, that was a really big pay-per-view coming up in February and the legacy of Eddie Guerrero. Josh Matthews is with Chris Benoit and asks him his chances of winning the Royal Rumble tonight because Chris Benoit was the latest wrestler to have to deal with the evil heel authority figure in Paul Heyman. And as a result, Heyman had inserted Chris Benoit to enter the Royal Rumble at number one.
Heyman was a heel as well.
Heyman was the big heel GM on SmackDown at this time. Mm-hmm. Before Benoit can discuss his chances, which I'm sure were very strong at this point, Evolution comes in with champagne. And Ric Flair says how Orton's going to win the Rumble. He puts over Chris Benoit as being great, but he lets the brass ring slip out of his hand and then spills champagne all over Josh Matthews. Ric Flair was great here. And this, I mean, all show long, the story is that, and Taz followed this promo by stating, Benoit is great, but he can never win the big one, which that's always the story that WWE loves to do right before the guy is going to achieve the big one, is put that mark on them that they can't do it.
Yeah. But
I thought Flair was great here.
Flair was tremendous. You know, I feel like this is not the first time we've seen a Chris Benoit promo interrupted by somebody on the level of a Ric Flair who just standing right next to Benoit, talking right after Benoit, completely outclasses him. And, you know, this was like 2 months before Benoit got the title, but you could still see, you know, I guess the guy was improving up until this point, but certainly not near the level I suppose you would expect of a main eventer, especially, you know, putting him right against Ric Flair, you know, just really kind of being completely outclassed.
I think you appreciate a lot of the talkers from the prior generation and prior generations, because today, per capita, there's a lot less great promos. That's something where, you know, the special ones stand out because it's not like all the guys are great promos. Very different environment. So when you go back, there's some people that at the time had the rap of not being a great promo. And you go back, and to me, Bret Hart is always a great example. You go back, he was actually a very good promo in my mind.
Worked on me as a kid.
Benoit was not. You go back, this guy, still to this day, one of my favorite promos was him in the locker room. Eddie Guerrero walks in, and he goes in all jovial and happy, and it's just Benoit staring a hole in him. And you watch Eddie Guerrero go through all these different emotions, from happy to concerned to upset to storming off, just playing off of Chris Benoit's stone face. And it was awesome. And Benoit didn't say a word.
And that's probably the best use of a Chris Benoit personality type. I mean, you look at Brock Lesnar on this show, and even Brock Lesnar, I don't think he's necessarily a great promo. The reason why they have him do those sit-down interviews is because that's the only time when
he's good
sound
in sound
credible.
Bites.
That's the only time when he can sound credible. Like, when he does these types of Josh Matthews interview segments, I don't think he sounds as good either. But, I mean, the guy's the biggest draw in the company. And it's because you kind of hide that fact that he can't necessarily talk like this.
So that takes us to our next match, our first of two title matches, with the WWE title match up first. And this was the classic example of the Rumble can be the match where you can do a title match with a weak challenger. And this is always the example cited. Brock Lesnar versus Hardcore Holly. And this stemmed from a SmackDown match in September of 2002 where, I mean, the story has always been, I mean, and you can watch it, you know, some thinking that Hardcore Holly sandbagged him and that Lesnar just forced him up for the powerbomb and ended up dropping him on his neck, whether Lesnar was, I mean, you can go and judge for yourself.
What does Holly say in his book?
You know what? I actually have his book somewhere here. Oh. I should have grabbed the story, but it is in Hardcore Holly's book where he addresses this. Anyway, the point is he broke his neck. And they made his comeback way bigger than anyone anticipated it. He got all these promos about coming for Lesnar, and he was going to break Lesnar's neck, and they just built it and built it and built it, and it built up to this Rumble title match.
God, if only like Seth Rollins or like some of these other guys could have had this.
You joke, and this Hardcore Holly's return was done way better than Seth Rollins, and that's sad.
Yeah.
For this very quick match, but they made Hardcore Holly come across as
definitely,
you know, as credible as he ever has.
Mm-hmm. Was this his only world title match?
Yes, I would say so. Yes. Unless there was some random Raw or a SmackDown, which I don't think there was.
In Mobile, Alabama.
Maybe, yes. This video also just featured numerous chair shots to skulls and Hardcore Holly threatening to break Brock's neck in this match. So the match begins. Holly just jumps him as Lesnar leaps onto the apron for the entrance, and they fight on the floor before the bell rings. Holly sends him twice into the post, and the whole challenge of this match was making fans believe Hardcore Holly could possibly beat Brock Lesnar going into WrestleMania. And I don't care how many promos Hardcore Holly cut. I don't think anyone was going to be suspending disbelief at that level. Holly crashes off the top, shoulder first into the mat as Lesnar moves, and then he drives the lower back of Holly into the apron, and he went to this body lock, just attacking the ribs of Holly. There was a high angle fisherman buster, and then a goes back to the body lock with a leg scissors, then a belly to belly. He takes the back of Holly with his hooks in, has a bit of a cross face. Holly fights out of that. Holly clotheslined him, drop kick, hits the Alabama slam, and then he goes for the dreaded full Nelson, which was his new submission to break Brock's neck. And he takes him down with it, lands on the floor with the full Nelson locked on, and then he reapplies it with Lesnar on the edge of the apron. Lesnar snaps the neck of Holly on the top rope to break it, and then Lesnar blocks another full Nelson, throws Holly, and hits him with the F5, and he pins Bob at 6 minutes and 30 seconds. Taz says that was physical and Smash Mouth style.
How long was the match?
6:30.
Again, you know, not necessarily what you'd expect for a world title match, especially of this build.
This one I wasn't complaining about.
No, not necessarily me neither. But much of those 6 minutes were taken up by this body lock that I felt went on for way too long. I don't exactly know what the thinking was. I don't know if that was done just to have the guys rest. For 6 minutes, I can't imagine that was necessarily the reason, but, you know, or if it was done to kind of, you know, sell some type of rib injury or something, but I thought it went on for a little too long and just kind of took the crowd out of this match. You know, I thought Bob Holly kind of did about as great as you could expect from somebody who's, I think, is very competent. You know, he's actually not a bad promo, but
not at all. I thought his promos, these were the best promos of his career. And this guy was never a bad promo. Yeah. I thought his talking was very underrated. But he was a guy that had been slotted at a level forever, that it was a very difficult leap to now take this guy as a credible threat in any kind of main event position. But
yeah, I would also say, like, there's just something about kind of like him throughout his entire career that just like he just felt very kind of bland. You know what I mean? Outside of his, like, that super heavyweight run, which I think was still hilarious, but to me, he's a guy who's, you know, a very competent wrestler, but just not necessarily somebody that ever stood out.
I will say, I thought his book, it's definitely worth checking out if you haven't read it. I think he's a pretty, you know, he talks about his career very kind of honestly about where he was slotted, what worked, what didn't, that kind of stuff. And I will say, when I interviewed him, this was one of the nicest guys to ever deal with. Like, could not have been more thankful just for being interviewed. Mm. And I will say, I think that there's a reputation of Hardcore Holly that doesn't really hold up if you ever deal with the guy, at least my own personal dealings with the guy. But this would be probably the peak of his WWE run in terms of prominence, I would say. And then we go to the back. Hunter is getting taped up, and we contrast that with Shawn Michaels, who is praying. And then we go into their video with Hunter and Shawn and their history, going back to 1997, the breakup in 98, and then the match in 2002 to set up their last man standing match, which was made after they had a big match to finish off Raw in 2003. They were in San Antonio, Texas, Shawn Michaels challenging for the title, and it ended with the double pin where the count was made and both shoulders were down of Hunter and Shawn.
Wasn't it a last man standing?
No, it was just a regular match.
Oh, wait, I'm
match.
Thinking about this
yeah,
match.
This was the last man standing match. Yes. They'll do a first man standing match next.
Yeah.
And therefore, the crowd was just so angry. And this was a really good match they had in San Antonio Raw.
They
did the draw in San Antonio to set up the last man standing match here in Philadelphia.
Which is about to end in a draw again.
Yeah.
Okay.
So this was the match that, amazingly, way this one didn't get any time cut, I don't think.
I really don't think so either.
Maybe it did, because later this year, I mean, Hunter and Shawn, they end up working the Rumble together, mm-hmm. WrestleMania with Benoit, the April pay-per-view with Benoit. Then in June, they did a Hell in a Cell match that I am not kidding. 47 minutes, these guys. They did Okada and Omega.
Wow.
In a Hell in a Cell. And it was not Okada Omega. Not to say it was bad, but anyway, 47 minutes, long fucking time.
Yeah. If you're Hunter and Sean.
So at 22 minutes, maybe this did get cut a bit.
Perhaps. But if you're Hunter and Sean, you're probably getting that say over Ray and Jamie Noble.
I mean, compare the SmackDown and Raw world title representations on this Royal Rumble.
Yeah.
So Hunter is working on Michael's back early on. Michael's used a dragon screw and applied a figure four. Hunter gets out of that, and Michael's focuses on the right knee of Hunter. Michael's runs at Hunter, misses, and crashes over the top to the floor. And then we had one of the classic signs, my favorite way, acrostic poems from wrestling fans.
Yeah.
This one read vertically, HBK. HHH, butt kicker. HBK. Butt kicker. This sign was not fat. The first pedigree attempt is countered with a back body drop that sent Hunter to the floor, and then Michaels decides with Hunter on the floor, he would go for a springboard reverse cross body, almost like an acai moonsault, but a reverse cross, and Mrs. Hunter crashes through the Spanish announce desk and comes up, and apparently this desk sliced an artery. This was ridiculous.
This was like some of the craziest color I've ever seen in a WWE ring. He must have cut a big vein somewhere, because man, he was just bleeding a lot. I found it a little ridiculous though, coming off of a table break, an announce table break, where I just, you know, there, it's not as believable that a man would bleed this much from doing a crossbody through a table.
I wonder if there was a Tylenol shortage amongst drugstores in Philadelphia the night prior.
Could have been that.
This guy bled an unbelievably insane amount.
Oh, it warranted a TVMA rating.
This actually made me whenever I see like crazy blood in wrestling, my go-to is always the Passion of the Christ. And for whatever reason, I Googled the Passion of the Christ. This match took place on January 25th of 2004. The Passion of the Christ came out February 25th, exactly 1 month after this match.
Wow. And it's Shawn Michaels.
And it's Shawn Michaels. Oh, 1 month after Christmas, yeah. Too. I mean, what a tie-in.
And maybe 13 years from the release of his film.
Yes.
Whatever that film's called.
This was Blood from a Gavin Stone. Ah, is that his name? Gavin Stone.
Gavin Stone.
The Resurrection. So Michaels is just about to die here in the ring. His face is completely covered.
It was gross. It looked like a red ski mask.
Like it's very, yeah, just, no, you're so out of it by now watching today's, like even when you'll see some promotions that use blood, it was nothing at this level.
Yeah.
This was like every bit your Muto or high-end Mick Foley bloodbath. I mean, this was right at the top of just blood.
It's a blade job that helps you argue against the use of blade jobs today.
So Hunter is yelling at him to stay down. Michaels keeps coming back. Hunter uses chair shots to the back of Michaels, who is selling that he is near death, fights to his feet. Michaels blocks a pedigree on a chair, catapults him into the post, and then Michaels hits him with a chair shot. Hunter gets his hand up and goes down, but now Hunter is also bleeding.
At that point, I mean, I guess it's a last man standing match, sure. It just like, it didn't necessarily make the match better, you know?
No. And I mean, Hunter was certainly, I mean, 2000, 2001, he was having incredible matches. I think that definitely, that level of matches from Hunter kind of went down a notch or so after the quad tear and when he came back. But this was a guy too that, to be fair, this guy relied on blood a lot in his big matches. I mean, this guy loved to bleed.
He loved Ric Flair.
Yeah, he did. Michaels does his kip up. And maybe that was – I don't know if the kip up was necessary here.
Why?
Because he is just about a drop or two away from needing a blood transfusion. I can't imagine a kip up in this situation.
Listen, adrenaline does great things, okay? And it's his Hulk up spot. I think it works every time.
He hits a top rope elbow. Ross asks if we are seeing a miracle as the crowd is on their feet as he calls for the sweet chin music. I mean, say what you will. Shawn Michaels as the baby face that is on the verge of death but is making the valiant comeback. There's few better. Hunter stops the sweet chin music by going down to his knees and not praying, but instead punching him right in the testicles. Michaels then applies a sleeper. Hunter gets out, hits a DDT. Both are down. Hunter then hits a pedigree. Michael staggers up before the count and out of nowhere lands a super kick as both are down. Both are bleeding. Both are near defeat. Shawn Michaels, his testicles throbbing. He tries to get up, but he can't. And the count of 10 is made at 22 minutes and 46 seconds. It is declared a draw as the crowd instinctually boos and then chants bullshit at the loudest possible volume.
This thing could change in a second. And it did. 1 second if Shawn Michaels can just get up.
The game isn't moving. Michaels is trying to stir. Get up, Shawn.
Michaels is getting up. He's going to make it.
No, he can't get up. What?
Can.
Referee calls for the bell.
What does this mean?
Another man could make their beat.
Ladies and gentlemen, as both men were unable to answer the count of 10, the referee has declared that Triple H is still the World Heavyweight Champion.
Well, there was no decision other than both men are down. If you want to look at it, and the referee's signaling for some help, and I can concur with that. Neither man could get up before the 10 count. And if you want to look at it as a tie, then obviously you can't lose the championship unless you beat. And in this environment, Shawn Michaels would have had to get up, King.
Well, I realize that. These fans just felt that Shawn Michaels. I felt Shawn Michaels had it as well.
And Evolution comes out tending to Hunter. No one tends to poor Shawn, who is eventually taken out on a stretcher but refuses help and walks to the back. And thus concluded the last man standing match. Clearly the highlight of the show up until this point. Really no comparison to the prior matches.
Yeah, it was really the only match that got in.
This was the only, like, the rest felt like just TV matches.
Yeah.
That's what the rest was.
They were very ambitious with this match. Tried to cram a lot in. A lot of blood was shed. What was the planned result coming out of this? Were they supposed to do a solo singles match at Mania, or was it always a three-way?
They always had the three-way was the direction, and this was a way. I'm sure the original idea was Hunter Benoit just straight up at Mania, and I imagine they lobbied for this result because this was not – I would say if you wanted a draw, a last man standing match maybe is not the best gimmick to do it in because that is a match for finality.
At what point do you think it was decided to bring Shawn in to the main event?
I would guess it was – I mean
– And was that simply
– Hunter and Shawn had a ton of sway at this point on Raw. Yeah. So I imagine this was very much a motivated direction from Hunter and Shawn to have both in the Mania main event with Benoit.
And was it because you think that there was some hesitation of just having a Chris Benoit-led babyface main event?
I would think that it was – I mean – motivated, but I think Hunter wanted Shawn in that match. I'm sure Shawn, what was his option beyond that? Like, take Shawn out of that main event. I don't know what his program is for WrestleMania.
But that's no excuse to all of a sudden make your WrestleMania main event a three-way, which is unusual.
I'm not going to argue it because it was a great match. Yeah. And they arguably had an even better match the following month in Edmonton. So I really didn't have that big an issue of it looking in hindsight. I know a lot of people like just – it is funny because in 99, there was a push to have Austin and Rock become a three-way with Mick Foley, and it was the Shawn camp at the time that was stating, well, you can't do a three-way for your WrestleMania main event. And Mick Foley ended up doing a four-minute match with Paul White on that show. And then the following year, it was like a four-way WrestleMania main event. So anyway, arguments go both ways, I guess.
Yeah. You know, obviously this was a good match. Personally, I mean, I look back at their SummerSlam 2002 match, and that's one of my favorite matches of all time. And I think, though, the reason for that is because it was Sean's first match back from his back injury, and the shock.
You legitimately thought this guy could be paralyzed in this match.
The shock of him taking anything to the back, let alone, you know, backbreaker through a steel chair, was so memorable and so dramatic that I feel like a match like this, even with all the blood, all the big spots, can't really live up to something like that for me. So I felt, you know, the blood was all the blood was a little overboard. And, you know, I wasn't as big of a fan of this match, but it was certainly, you know, a good match still.
Yeah, I thought this was really good too. I think the San Antonio match gets forgotten just because it was on TV, but that's a really good match as well. And the crowd was just so behind Shawn Michaels in that particular match, if you want to check that out. So that concludes that match, and we got a preview then for the Rumble with the video. Your story's going into this. Benoit is slotted at number one by Paul Heyman, and they did a Raw Battle Royal on the previous Monday where Bill Goldberg won the Battle Royal, so he's number 30. Jim Ross and Taz are the ones calling this match, so this was...
I thought a good team.
I think the first time they ever did a match together.
Yeah, I thought these two were – I mean, you know, like say what you will about Cole and Taz, but I thought they were great in this era. I really like Cole's pace and energy, and Taz at this point was doing a lot more technical analysis of a lot of the wrestling, and I thought he was great at it.
Yeah. I guess they got over their issues of 2000 with the glass to the eye and – Taz.
They have a feud? Oh,
Taz and Jim Ross.
Jim Ross.
Yeah.
All right.
Good. Taz taking a baseball bat to the
feud, right?
It led to the Taz-Lawler match, right. Yeah. And then Jim Ross using the candy jar on Taz.
Yeah, it's, you know.
Baseball bat to the limo window to Jim Ross's
like
eye.
4 years ago. Come on.
Yeah. The bygones be bygones.
Yeah.
Eric Bischoff interrupted Howard Finkel during the introduction of the Royal Rumble and going over the rules. He says a Raw star will win and is better than SmackDown, and he's a better GM. So Paul Heyman comes out, and this is where Bischoff runs down ECW, stating that they used to run a rinky-dinky shows in a rundown bingo hall here in Philadelphia. So then Heyman comes out. He gets an ECW chant, and then he tosses his microphone to Eric and then tackles him down. And they're fighting badly as Steve Austin comes out on his ATV. This woke up the crowd. He states they're wasting time. It leads to Austin stunning Bischoff, grabbing a beer, and then stunning Heyman. And Austin then continued to drink beer. So this canvas way was doused in beer as well as half the blood inside of the heads of Triple H and Shawn Michaels. This looked gross.
That is nasty.
This was unfortunate for one Chris Benoit, who would be spending the next 62 minutes of his life on this canvas.
Unfortunate for the ring crew who had to clean this up. I hope they had a lot of Lysol.
This required a canvas change, in my opinion.
Ricardo has a lot of Lysol.
So Austin drove up the ramp while chugging beer.
And some blood,
yes,
I assume.
Quite the PSA here.
Yeah.
Terry Runnels interviews Goldberg. He's in an empty locker room. And then Brock Lesnar walks in. And they had already started this tease at the Survivor Series where they had whenever they would do the co-brand pay-per-views, the kind of interaction of Raw and SmackDown talent. So they teased it at the Survivor Series. This was the follow-up where Lesnar walks in and he doesn't care what number Goldberg has, and he should be the one to be interviewed. Goldberg asks if he's done putting himself over and says the last time they met, Goldberg was a champion. What happened to your belt, Bill? And Goldberg then pretends that Hardcore Holly is behind Brock, and Brock is scared and jumps and reveals that no one is behind him. And Goldberg says that some people have the nerve to call Mick Foley a coward. He doesn't think so. And
It was really unusual scripting of Brock Lesnar, especially the Brock that we know today.
Yeah, he was running scared of Hardcore Holly on TV, and now he was he's also continuing to be scared of
him. Yeah, he was also talking for himself, which, you know, as we stated, I don't think it's the best use of him.
And then we go to a shot of Mick Foley's empty seat, and Ross says that if Mick Foley doesn't show up, he would have to admit that he's a coward. And Taz says, well, he's not here. He's not here. And Ross is so depressed, and he has to conclude, well, he's a coward. It's very tough for one Jim Ross. Taz then presented the keys to victory, which were hide, conditioning, and get a high number. So the winner of this Rumble would not follow two of these three. So that takes us to the start
keys
of the
keys to victory.
The Taz keys to victory.
Don't get thrown over the top rope.
Hide. Yeah. So number one was Chris Benoit. And then the second entrant was Randy Orton, which would be some foreshadowing way for the SummerSlam main event. Mm-hmm. And the man who would end Chris Benoit's world title run. Orton is the Intercontinental Champion at this time. He had just won the title, and he would have a pretty long reign with the title. In third was Mark Henry alongside Teddy Long, wearing this blue singlet spandex with MH on the front. This was not the red Kool-Aid singlet of Mark Henry, but not much better. Number four was Tajiri, and Benoit his rolling German suplexes to Tajiri. Fifth was Bradshaw, who comes in and he clotheslines everyone except for Benoit, who ducks the clothesline from hell into a crossface, and then Benoit reverses and sends Bradshaw out for the first elimination. And something clever here, a reversal for the clothesline.
Yeah. What do you mean?
I'm just saying it was a clever spot.
Why are you laughing?
I'm not.
Why are you smiling?
Because I feel you weren't as impressed with the reversal as I was. That's it.
It was fine. Okay. I thought it was just basic, but.
All right.
Why are you? I don't know why it deserves a laughter. Laughter, though.
I feel like I've been. I feel like Shawn Michaels, where I'm getting woozy from blood loss, even though I'm not bleeding right now.
This is Bradshaw with a new look.
But, yeah, this was pre gimmick change.
Pre JBL. Yeah.
Yeah. The dying days of the APA.
Yeah.
Rhino was out sixth, and we saw the mist from Tajiri to Henry as he goes for the tarantula, and Benoit and Rhino were former tag partners in 2003. Benoit's now a heel working with Heyman, and he missed a gore.
Rhino's
the heel, yes, working with Heyman. He misses the gore, and he hits Mark Henry, and it knocks Tajiri out, and then Benoit sends Mark Henry over, eliminating him. Seventh was, working Matt Hardy. He was issues. Number eight was Scott Steiner. Remember him? He came out, clotheslined everyone, hit Orton with a suplex, then a belly-to-belly to Benoit, and then Benoit hit two Germans to Scott Steiner, which was so painful to watch. Scott Steiner taking these Germans. Ross notes that there are no former Royal Rumble winners in this year's match, so someone will win the Rumble for the first time. Out ninth was Matt Morgan, accompanied by his awful hair. He had his normal hair, but then the tip of the beginning of his hair, where it started, was dyed blonde. And it just...
That was the look.
It looked like vomit.
You never dyed your hair?
I did, and I shake my head as well. But I was young. I don't know what Matt Morgan's excuse was. Number 10 was the Hurricane. Morgan lifts the Hurricane and just tosses him to the floor very quickly. Booker T comes out to his WWE Originals theme song, a CD that had just come out that we have reviewed on a past review away.
Right.
There are some awful themes on that.
Some people should never have their theme songs changed. Oh. Shawn Michaels, Chris Jericho.
They changed Jericho's entrance to that theme for a time as well.
Yeah. Well, he was a heel too, wasn't he?
Kind of. He was in this tweener role because he was – he was still hung up on Trish, but he had the alliance with Christian. But he was about to do the babyface turn, and that theme was certainly not pointing him in that direction. Five out of the seven people in this ring at this point were future TNA wrestlers. We had Booker, Scott Steiner, Matt Morgan, Rhino, and Matt Hardy. So
interesting.
There was scouting going on here.
Mm-hmm.
Kane was out 12th, and Jim Ross calls him a, quote, hideous human being. And during the entrance, we miss Scott Steiner being dumped out. Quite the fall from grace from Steiner challenging Hunter for the title a year ago to his elimination being missed because of Kane's entrance this year. not a very solid second WWE run for Big Papa Pump. They did replay the exit. And then Kane chokeslams Benoit. Morgan and Orton, everyone is down from Kane. The 13th entrant is the Undertaker's gong going off. This was after the Undertaker had been murdered at the Survivor Series and buried. And Kane is angry, staring at the video wall when Booker T comes from behind and dumps out Kane. And then Spike Dudley reveals himself from the back as the 13th entrant. And Kane chokeslams Spike on the ramp as Kane is eliminated. And we were full on to our build of the Undertaker returning as the dead man character for the latest battle with Kane,
mm-hmm.
a feud that we were all counting down to. 14th was Rikishi. He gave a stink face to Matt Morgan. Then 15th was Rene Dupree from Raw, which Taz asked, this is the French guy, right? And he was 20 years old at this time. Dupree drop kicks Hardy out, and then Dupree did his dance, turned around, took a sidekick from Rikishi, and Rene Dupree was eliminated. The A-Train was 16th. A lot of big men coming out here. Benoit was with Morgan in the corner, eliminated him. Orton then comes from behind and sends Rikishi over. Then he eliminates Booker T after they were working on A-Train. Shelton Benjamin was in. Benoit eliminated A-Train right as Benjamin entered. And Ross apologizes for missing that elimination after Taz pointed it out. And Benjamin goes for a kick. Orton avoids it and just sends Shelton to the floor. And we are back to just Benoit and Orton at the 26-minute mark as Benoit avoids an Irish whip in the corner, turns, and they crack heads and both men go down. So
yeah.
Halfway through here, what were your thoughts on the Rumble here?
Well, clearly much of the spotlight being given to Chris Benoit and also to Randy Orton, as the two men that – despite starting the match, have outlasted everybody, including a lot of the Giants. So making both men look really strong. And, you know, Benoit, you'd expect it. But I think Randy Orton getting the similar push at the time was a bit of a surprise.
Which is always – I always love that spot of the guy who's on the cusp and he's not winning the Rumble, but just having a long showing is a standout.
Yeah.
And Orton was perfect for that role this year.
But overall, there's nothing really all that spectacular about this first half of the Rumble. Nothing.
The star power was very lacking.
Yeah. I mean, the most significant thing I'd say leading into Mania was really the Taker tease with Kane. But beyond that, production-wise, I didn't feel like there were too many kind of storylines being teased. Also a little sloppy, with a lot of ejections kind of being missed.
Yeah. Out 18th with just Benoit and Orton in the ring was Ernest Miller with his ring announcer Lamont, who enters. He starts dancing. Taz actually started singing along with this.
Well, somebody better call his mama. Somebody call my mama. Come on, JR.
Call his mama,
somebody
but he can't dance his way to the main event at WrestleMania.
Yeah, he's got some quick feet.
Got to fight his way in, and I hear this guy's like,
call my mama. Somebody call my mom. Come on, Jay. You're helping out.
I'm not. He's an entertaining. He's an entertaining guy. I'll have to admit that.
He's dancing. He's nutty, silly. He's got the Elvis pants on. He's nutty. Look at him.
Benoit knocks off Lamont's wig, sends him over, and then Orton eliminates Miller, and they go back to fighting. Kurt Angle was out 19th, and Angle has guaranteed a victory for all of the troops. And large, you suck chance. And Angle was a babyface at this time. Orton just lets them go at it with Benoit and Angle.
He's going to get those you suck chants,
at the Hall of Fame.
The Hall of Fame, yeah.
Yes.
It's a babyface chant for him.
Number 20, Rico. And we got a battle of OVW here between Made It and Didn't Made It. Orton and Rico going at it here.
Oh.
And Orton,
yeah.
People were so high on Rico in OVW, and that certainly did not translate to the main roster. Orton hit an RKO here. Benoit hit the Rolling Germans onto Angle. Orton then lifted and dumped out Rico. Out number 21 was supposed to be Test, but he never comes out. Orton hits an RKO to Angle, and then we go backstage, and Test is unconscious on the floor. Steve Austin is checking on him. He's not going to make it, and he's yelling to someone off screen and says, Well, you've just taken out my number 21 guy and sends the mysterious guy to the ring who will now be 21.
It was just insinuating that this person also attacked Test?
Yes. Huh. To create a
it makes
vacancy.
Sense. It makes sense.
I was I thought it worked fine.
It doesn't make sense, though, that that person would be rewarded by Steve Austin.
Well, they did want Austin to show –
show bias?
Austin was the one who challenged Foley to appear and show he had guts. And Orton's out there in the ring. Austin at least established he wanted Mankind or Foley to confront Orton, and this was the opportunity for him to do that.
Okay.
I thought they wove this in pretty well. So Mankind's music hits. He comes out to maybe the biggest reaction on the show, would you say?
Yeah.
It was an unbelievable reaction. Mm-hmm. And they had let this build for so long, for weeks, of him finally confronting Orton. He enters. To Orton's credit, I mean, remember, he is still very young in the business. His facials here were incredible. His reactions, just in stunned disbelief. The crowd's going nuts. They start brawling. There's a running clothesline by Foley almost immediately that sends both Orton and himself over the top to the floor. Randy goes almost 34 minutes in the Rumble, so a very strong showing for him and a perfect way to eliminate him. And Foley got an unbelievable reaction. He continued by choking Orton with a cable on the floor. And if you want to see a very underrated Foley promo, the Raw from the next night, it builds up to the main event segment with Foley calling out Orton. And the promo, it starts off awkward where he demands that Randy spit in his face again. Randy finally does, and it is fucking gross. There's this giant wad of shit on his cheek. Foley proceeds. It's so gross. It's so uncomfortable. But then Foley continues to cut one of his best promos ever. And during the promo, he smashes himself in the orbital and he's bleeding. And it's as if he's crying blood, yelling. This promo is unbelievable. It's unbelievable.
Cool.
It blows away anything I think that was on WWE television this year in terms of a promo. It was just great. So that's your homework, folks. So Orton's gone. Number 22 is Christian. And meanwhile, Foley is still on the floor with Orton. He grabs the steps and he nails Fit Finley with them, but this allows Orton to just murder him with two chair shots to the head, which was very tough to watch Mick Foley take in 2004, and then drove Foley headfirst into the ramp. Foley did fight back. He took out Socko, and instead of applying it on Orton, he applies it on Nunzio, who is the next entrant. And then this allows Orton to kick Foley low and run to the back. And Nunzio proceeded to just sit on the floor as Angle, Benoit, and Christian go at it in the ring. And Nunzio just sat on the floor for like 10 minutes.
He saw the keys to victory.
He did. He hid. Big Show was out 24th. That's Taz's pick to win the whole thing. Then Chris Jericho was 25th. He goes after Angle. Big Show stops Jericho and Christian's double teaming of Angle, and all three team up to work on Big Show against the ropes. Charlie Haas is out number 26. Christian turns and he tries to toss Jericho out. He holds on, and then Jericho back body drops Christian to the floor. And this was a playoff the previous year where they were also working together, and Jericho eliminated him in that Rumble as well. 27th was Billy Gunn, and this was his big return from shoulder injury.
Didn't feel like it.
Well, he had been out for several months, and they had been teasing his return. And he comes in, and he hits a famouser to Angle, Jericho, and Big Show.
Unless you're like a main eventer, I feel like unpromoted return at the Rumble is really not a good way.
Hey, had Hardcore Holly not been ready, that could have been the title match, Brock and Billy.
Wow.
They could call it Brockabilly. The match. Number 28 was John Cena. Strong reaction. He spots Nunzio hiding on the floor and sends him into the ring. 29th was Rob Van Dam, who lands a spin kick onto Jericho, which Ross calls an ugly, ugly move. Cena hits the FU to Angle. And then the 30th and final entrant is Bill Goldberg. And I will say, as much as we look at this as a very disappointing year that Goldberg had, my God, was he still over. I saw this on the Raw going into this show, and here everyone came to their feet for his entrance. It's not like this was any bit of drama. Everyone knew he was 30th. He comes in, he spears the Big Show, he spears Billy Gunn, he knocks the others down, he shoves out Charlie Haas while Nunzio is on his back, and the spear he delivered to Nunzio. I mean, you say spearing someone out of their shoes, this was the epitome of it. He just killed Nunzio with this spear. Then he clotheslines Billy Gunn out. He lifts Nunzio, press slams him to the floor. And then Goldberg goes to spear Big Show, and he's teasing a jackhammer when Brock Lesnar pops in out of nowhere, stops the jackhammer, and hits an F5 to Goldberg. And Angle turns, Angle is behind Goldberg, and as Goldberg is growling at Brock, Angle dumps him out from behind. And Brock's, Goldberg's only in this thing for like 2 or 3 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. So there you have it. Your WrestleMania program seems pretty locked in for Lesnar and Goldberg.
Crowd was ecstatic here at Brock's coming out, and, you know, probably ecstatic also at the confirmation of their WrestleMania match.
And this was way before anyone knew Brock would be finishing up at Mania.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew Goldberg's contract was coming up at WrestleMania.
That didn't seem to affect the fans' love of him, though.
No, and not a complete lock that he was leaving. I mean, you still had 2 months to possibly negotiate something. But anyway, you knew what direction they were going for those two. Big Show then did the monster spot, sending everyone flying as all six others tried to eliminate him. Angle clipped the knee of Big Show. Jericho did a lion salt. RVD hit his frog splash to Big Show. All the finishes are hit. Five knuckle shuffle, a Benoit diving headbutt, and they try to lift him together, but again he knocks them all away. Show then throws Cena over, and he landed really awkwardly on his knee on the floor and ended up needing a knee brace after this. Show caught Van Damme in the corner, hoisted him over to the floor, and we are down to Chris Benoit, Big Show, Chris Jericho, and Kurt Angle. So bunch of different spots here, interactions. Show lifted and chokeslammed Jericho out to the floor. Then there was a chokeslam to Benoit, an Angle slam to Big Show, and then another one to Benoit. Angle applies an ankle lock to Big Show, and Show is fighting out, and he flips over, and in doing so, sends Angle over the top to the floor, and Angle is furious.
I really like the elimination coming. You know, it makes a lot more sense with Angle doing an ankle lock to somebody the size of Big Show and getting tossed out that way because of the size discrepancy, and I thought it worked out.
So Benoit then counters a chokeslam, applies the crossface. Big Show is tapping, but then he powers up and side slams out of it. Benoit then stops a press slam, transitions into a guillotine, and Big Show walks over to the ropes, places Benoit on the edge of the apron with the guillotine applied, and everyone remembers this. It's Benoit arching back and sends Big Show over the top with the guillotine applied, and Big Show lands on the floor. Benoit wins the Rumble. 61 minutes and 31 seconds with Benoit going from number one to win the entire Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the better Royal Rumbles.
I feel like there have been better.
There has been better, but I thought there was...
I'll tell you, I feel like all their build-up to the matches at WrestleMania, I thought was done well here. I thought the Brock Goldberg build, you know, as short as it was, I thought was well done, received a great reaction. Benoit here, I thought was built beautifully for his main event. Of course, he also had a Foley and Orton, which couldn't have had a better reaction, I thought. To me, like, I didn't feel like there were all too many memorable moments beyond those things. Like, for me, the Rumble has – there weren't any surprise entrants, you know? I feel like, to me, some of the best Rumbles have some – surprise scenarios of like combinations that you didn't expect, spots that you really didn't expect. Here, I feel like a lot of it was a little predictable. But, you know, if the end goal is to just really focus on WrestleMania, they definitely did a good job of that.
Yeah, that's what I kind of look at for the Rumble is how much you get in place for Mania. And I thought overall this show, you had a good idea of where the WrestleMania card was heading, how it was shaping up. You had the story of Benoit going through everybody here. It definitely was it did show you kind of where they were lacking with star power. Like, you had way more Ricos and Spikes than you did have, your Angles and Cenas and Ortons. Like, it was a pretty small number, I think, that you could believe had a chance of actually winning this whole thing. But I thought it was a pretty good Rumble. Certainly, this show, you measure it off the Rumble and the Last Man Standing match, because the first, like, 90 minutes of this show, nothing too memorable.
I agree. What do you rate this show?
I give the show a 6.5 out of 10.
I give it a 6 out of 10.
All right. We will now go to the message board, and we want to hear from you with your feedback to the 2004 Royal Rumble.
This one's from Tommy K. Says, I thought it was a decent show overall, and I'm glad that Benoit won. I just wish that Big Show wasn't the last one in there with him. It felt just a bit anticlimactic because I don't care that much about Show. Imagine if it was Benoit and Angle, and they could go another 5 minutes. How true. They could have put over the War of the Two-Head the year before, and I thought it would have made for a much better climax to the event with Benoit and Angle having one last battle until they tangle again somewhere down the line. That's a good point. I think we were all thinking that there might be something along those lines, you know?
True, but the fact that Benoit had to throw over someone the mass of Big Show and did so by himself in a clever way,
yeah,
it was a good ending.
That, you know what? I think that helps, too, that it was clever. And we also got an email. It was the Happy Face shirt. You were right, Jay. I thought it was the Cactus Jack.
Yeah,
right?
Wishful thinking.
That's it.
WrestleMania.
I'm partial to Jack, that's for sure. Sean's on the line from Newmarket. Sean, what did you think about tonight's extravaganza?
I like the Rumble. I was hugely looking forward to the heavyweight title match, Last Man Standing and Chavo.
Yeah.
Chavo, the Guerrero, I thought was going to be a great match, and he can put over anyone.
Yeah.
And
they just didn't give him enough time.
I was just, I just wasn't there the entire time. Frog Splash, 1, 2, 3. Wow.
Yeah.
It was just there. I mean, I was thinking there's some cool spots, like maybe. Because Chavo, you said, was stuck in the mid-card.
Right.
Maybe Angle comes out and accidentally screws over Eddie.
Yeah, that's what we were kind of thinking.
Sets up a no way out match. Yep. I was thinking he was coming out all along. That just didn't happen. So that leaves Eddie who knows where, and Angle the same thing. I don't know how they're going to feud.
No, yeah, I don't know. That's obviously something that'll have to lead through on SmackDown. Yeah, because, and we're hearing the talk of Eddie against Lesnar at the next pay-per-view.
And they've only got 3 weeks to do this in.
That's true. The next pay-per-view is mid-February, so, yeah, they don't have a lot of time.
No.
I thought the Rumble was good. I thought it was kind of cool that...
What did you think about the booking in that Triple H Michaels match, that finish?
Oh, I mean... I mean, if my top 10, neither of those two are in it, but I was so huge for that match. And then the double count out thing just reminded me a lot of Orton Michaels at Unforgiven.
Yeah.
Great match, and then that finish there just goes a bitter taste in my mouth.
Yeah, it's the same as the finish. Thanks for your call, Sean. It's the same as the finish when they did the match on Raw. They did a bogus finish there, and they did a bogus finish this time. It's like... And the worst part is that means this feud continues, and I don't know where else you're gonna go with it. Rohit's on the line from Mississauga. How you doing tonight, man? Hello? Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, you paying attention?
One thing.
Yeah.
One thing.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
You're on the radio. Yeah, okay. You're on the radio, dude.
Yeah, all right. I just wanted to get something on my chest before I forget. You know how McMahon was saying about if he finds anybody caught leaking information?
Yes.
Anybody?
Yes.
Imagine if it was Triple H. What do you think they would do?
Nothing. Absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Cause it's
absolutely nothing.
Exactly. Okay. With the Royal Rumble, I thought it was pretty good. Everything was... Yeah, the first couple matches were short. The HBK-Triple H match, they're not going to go over each other anymore. They already...
It was a... Yeah, but... Oh, but come on. They're buddies. I thought they'd be... I thought they wouldn't have these problems. These guys like each other. Even the buddies, they can't put can't put the other over.
Yeah, I know. But the one thing they could have done, have HBK win, go on to WrestleMania, and then fight Chris Benoit.
Well, absolutely, dude. Anything. I think, and the crowd was evidence enough. They wanted Michaels to win that match. Yeah, anything with Michaels coming out with the belt, I think, would have been a favorable situation. But this double countout thing, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah. And during the Chavo and Eddie's match, Chavo's dad should have interfered. Done something to make it.
Oh, but Eddie tied his tie to the bottom rope there.
Yeah. I know. What was the last thing? Me and my buddy Ravi, we were watching it. We're so disappointed our man Spike Dudley didn't win the Rumble.
Oh, well, he didn't even get in there. Oh, well.
But yeah, Chris Benoit, he's the man. He's going to WrestleMania. He's going to win the title.
Oh, I hope you're right, man.
It's time.
Thanks a lot for your call. Yeah. Oh, he does, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for the call, dude. I obviously the general consensus seems to be here that most people enjoyed the Royal Rumble match itself and feel a little shortchanged on the undercard. Tony, what did you think about tonight's extravaganza?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
Good.
I'm happy with the Royal Rumble itself, the match.
Right.
But, I'm very happy for Benoit. He finally got his due, but that Triple H... HBK matches just put a bitter taste in my mouth. It was horrible. Where does that storyline go now?
Well, that's the thing. With that kind of finish, that means the feud must continue. That means they've got to have at least one more match, means another screw job finish.
I guess they're going to have a lumberjack match tomorrow. What's next? It's horrible.
You're right. I mean, it's so sad, especially because both guys have great matches in the ring, and they just wreck them with these bad finishes. And the fact that you could use Michaels to get some guys, some other guys over, you know, it's a waste.
I was hoping to see Jericho actually win the Royal Rumble and face Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania. That would have been just great to see them go at it at another WrestleMania.
It would have been a good match, but again, that storyline's kind of dead too, though. Where do you go with that storyline?
I don't think anybody would have had a problem seeing those two go at it again and see Jericho go over at WrestleMania and have that as the last match for HBK.
That would be awesome, but I mean, the way that he's performing in-ring lately, I don't think he's going to be going away anytime soon because, you might be tired of him, but at least in-ring, my God, he's a great performer.
We just need
to see him put some other guys over, that's all, you know. Instead of, we don't want him just wrapped up in a feud with Triple H all the time.
I hope Triple H goes and performs in another movie, so he's gone for another
couple months. He is supposed to be gone for a while, and that's one of the reasons we thought that Michaels might go over in this match as well, right?
Okay. It's just disappointing, good.
Anything else, Tony?
No, that's everything. Thanks, guys.
All right, man. Thanks a lot for your call, dude. We're going to hit to one more phone call. The man, Carson, is on the line here. Carson, what did you think about tonight's extravaganza?
Okay, well, granted, the first four matches were either mediocre or disappointing or both. But,
and shorter than I don't know what.
Yeah, but I got to say, the more I think about it, I think I like the ending to the HBK Triple H. It killed the live crowd, but I think it makes sense because if you think about it, every time they have a pay-per-view that's one brand, the show right before it for the other brand is hot-shotted. They'll have a main event level thing on SmackDown for the Raw pay-per-view. I think we'll see our last Triple H versus Shawn Michaels thing happen right before No Way Out. I think Benoit will show up afterwards. Triple H will try and continue the beating. Benoit comes out, saves him. That'll lead into WrestleMania. I think that could work.
Ah, I see. Okay.
I don't know if that's what they'll do, but that's what I would do, which means it's probably the complete opposite. But as for the Rumble itself, I thought this last year was still my favorite. This year, I think, was real close. I like the fact that Benoit and Orton are almost mirroring each other. Benoit throws someone out, so Orton does. Benoit will go after a big guy, so Orton does, like one thing after another.
Right.
I like the Ernest the Cat Miller thing because if you think about it, they did the same thing in 2001 with Honky Tonk. Came out, did his entire song,
right,
and then Kane just whacked him over the head and threw him out.
Got the toss out. Yeah, I suppose. I mean, you have to, I guess, have your comic moment. But the thing is, again, with Ernest Miller, we haven't even seen him wrestle. Like all of a sudden, he gets a spot in the Rumble.
All the more reason to get rid of him real quickly, have his quick spot first, since they are paying the guy.
That's true. I guess they got to do something with him.
The only other thing, I've been kind of losing faith in them the last few months, but I went to this show at the Famous Players, and hearing the crowd pop for Foley and for Benoit and for Rene Dupree, of all people, it was the loudest cheer I've ever heard for Foley and for Benoit winning. It drowned out the screen, which is on full volume.
Good, which is good. Well, that's good too.
I have my faith somewhat renewed, and I couldn't be happier that Foley's back and Benoit won.
And it's that dance with Rene Dupree. People love
the dance.
Seeing the dance, and everyone wanted to see him do it before he got his ass tossed, right?
And I think the other thing is they cheer for every Canadian. I think people are finally realizing he's actually French Canadian.
Yeah, that's right. Not exactly.
So people are starting to figure that out.
I think you're right, Carson. Thanks a lot for your call, dude.